ultrarunning.com. They make great shoes, and they're now one of Trail Runner Nation's partners.
Well, Scott, they've been my partner for a while. One on the left foot, one on the right foot. I enjoy that shoe. It's one of my all-time favorites to pick out.
You know, we just got off a podcast with Candace Burt and Dr. Ryan Green. Now, Dr. Ryan Green owns a shoe store. He can run in anything. Guess what he's running in, Don?
Tell me.
Ultra.
He's running in the Ultra Instinct, Scott.
Candace Burt. Lone, what does she run in?
Ultra Lone Peak. So these are athletes they can run in anything they want, and here's why I think they've chose Ultra. It's because that shoe has the right size toe box. It has zero drop. It was built for the trail. They understand what it takes to run.
This company was born from runners.
Here is probably one of my favorite things. When I opened up my box of shoes,
yeah,
there is instructions on how to run with proper gait. And you know,
wow,
that is a shoe company that gets it.
Today we have our gait tip by both coaches Ian Torrance and Emily Harrison. Ian, give us a gait tip, something that we need to focus on and look at regarding gait.
Sure. If you find yourself dealing with a nagging injury, a heel pain, runner's knee, IT band type of injury that doesn't seem to go away, and just persists for long periods of time, it might be time to analyze your gait, focus more on cadence and landing underneath your body instead of overstriding. And you can do those things by finding a gait specialist. Most big cities have a gait specialist someone who can analyze your stride. They'll put you on a treadmill, videotape you, and be able to show you exactly what you're doing wrong.
Awesome. Coach Emily Harrison, anything to add about gait?
Not too much. I think seeking the advice of a professional if you're at that point is the most important thing. You know, they can assess the whole body and see maybe where the chain is breaking down. And a lot of times with the runners I've been finding is that glute strength is weak and or they're just not firing properly. So a lot of times that could be a simple fix, but one that requires a lot of persistence and dedication to correcting that. Yeah, that's about it.
Focusing on gait, critical for performance, longevity, and efficiency. Thanks, Coach Ian Torrance and Emily Harrison, for our performance gait tip.
They get it. Go to ultrarunning.com.
Scott, today I'm ordering new blades from Harry's Razors.
Harry's.com? Is that where you're going?
That's the one. We received a set of blades, some shaving gear not too long ago, and I have loved it.
You know, I always thought a blade's a blade's a blade. I always bought the cheap disposable blades at Costco and just went through them like crazy. And then I tried a Harry's shaving blade, and it was the best shave I've ever had in my life.
And we're not just saying that. I mean, I really do enjoy that shave and the shaving cream that comes with it.
About 2 years ago, these two guys started this company. They went over to Germany and bought this company that has been making high-quality blades for nearly a century.
Scott, I've almost used mine for nearly a century. These things last.
So you think such a high-quality blade, it's going to be expensive, like one of those expensive razors that you can buy? That's not the case. You can go to harrys.com. You can buy a shaving kit and enter, you know, your own shaving kit for $15. That includes the handle, three blades, some lotion, and it's very inexpensive. These blades last a long time too.
That would surprise me. They just keep going and going.
Now, here's the kicker.
Yeah.
For $15, I said, guess what? If you go to harrys.com and when you check out, you use the code TRN, you can get $5 off of that. For $10, why not try it?
What kind of shipping do they put on the end of that?
There is no shipping ever.
$10, I have some blades coming to my direction, and I'm going to be able to shave for an extended period of time?
Shave of your life.
Have you seen a beard on me lately, Scott?
You know, I haven't.
There you go. Clean shaven.
Go to harrys.com. Put in code TRN.
Or just head over to our partner page on Trail Runner Nation, and it will link you directly to Harry's Razor.
It's Petzl 30. Go to Petzl.com and get yourself a head torch.
Probably one of my favorite times to run, Scott, is when it's dark. And one of the my favorite reasons for that is because, well, the lighting that we carry on our head, that torch really lights up the trail. If you're running a long race and the day sets and it becomes evening, there's a resurgence. A new life is given to you at night.
You're right.
And all your woes of the day, perhaps the heat or the stomach or these things, they change. And when you turn on that headlamp, it is like you have a new life. It's a new race.
So why jeopardize that with an inferior headlamp? Go get yourself a head torch.
You do not need to waste extra energy squinting and wondering what's in the trail. You do not need to catch a toe and find yourself flat on your face. You need some good lighting. Do yourself that favor. Put the very best that's out there.
Go get a head torch, either the Now
Great.
Or the Tika RXP, the Mayo, which I have been running in the last few times. They're all great torches. Go to Petzl.com.
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Oh, come on. Don't put yourself down.
we are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warr.
And joining us today,
Sycamore.
Who's Sycamore, Scott?
Sycamore is the faithful dog of Ian Torrance and Emily Harrison. And because Sycamore's on, we decided it would be polite to have Ian and Emily on.
So that was the order of the invite?
Exactly. Well, it's hard for her to text us back.
Well, there you go.
Uh-oh,
well, welcome, Sycamore. No, that's great. Oh, you lost us?
Oh, you're back.
Good. Hey, well, welcome. This is a timely podcast because we're talking about patience.
And it is the beginning of race season for at least people in the Northern Hemisphere. And Ian has recently written an article in Iron Far called Patience and the Ultra Runner. And I saw the title and I said, you got to have patience.
Sure you do.
But the way he framed it up, I thought was very good. He said, you know, in our normal everyday lives, we're really waiting for everything. You get in the line at the grocery store. You get in the line to go to the ATM. You get in line to get on the freeway. And we become a patient people. However,
I'm gonna take issue with that. So yeah, go ahead.
Okay. However, as ultra runners, even though we're doing all this waiting in our normal lives, we're racing against the clock. How do we measure ourselves as ultra runners? Whether we're the place position, whether we got the silver buckle instead of the bronze buckle, whether we finished before the cutoff. And so we're always pushing ourselves so that, it's kind of a dichotomy, Don.
Yes. I'm going to say we are not a patient people, that we're texting. Everything's instant these days. We have 140 characters on Twitter. So I believe we are not very patient. But before we get into the meat of the article, let's talk about Ian Torrance and his coach. Ian, you're getting ready for Western States, right? And we're coming up on it. And sitting to our left, at least on the screen, is Emily Harrison, who's coaching him. And we all need a good coach. So, Emily, tell us a little bit about your athlete, how he's doing. Is he following your program?
Is he a patient athlete?
give us the information.
Yeah. Actually, when Ian was writing his patience article, he was talking about that, how he feels for the most part. He is pretty patient with his running and his during races and in training. He can apply that pretty well, probably because he knows what the end result will be if he does.
He says he's patient, but do you think he's patient?
Yeah, for the most part, I'd say so. Maybe he runs a little harder on some days than he should, but he knows when to back off. He's really good at listening to his body. So this is the first time if I'm correct, that he's had a training plan in a long time that he's actually A, had one, and B, followed. So far, so good. He's been
Now that's interesting.
He's been sticking to the plan. So.
That's interesting because he sent over the plan and forwarded it to us, and it was pretty detailed. Is he following that plan, or is he just listening to his body and listening to his coach, and does it morph along the way?
Yeah, it has morphed a little bit, just kind of dialing in some races that he wanted to do. I think we tweaked some things, but he's been following it for the most part, and pretty much to a T, actually. So that's been really good, and he's been getting in more volume consistently than he has in the past. I think that's one thing I was trying to consider going into when I built this plan, was that he's always said that over these past few hundred milers that he hasn't gotten enough volume in preparation for the race. So trying to safely kind of keep volume a little higher, a little consistently higher, and we'll see how that translates to Western States.
I've got a question for you, Emily. When you're coaching an athlete like Ian, how does that improve your running, or does it affect your running at all, being involved in their game? Does it change your game?
Yeah, actually right now it hasn't changed too much because I'm training for a road marathon. So he's built my training, and I'm doing a lot of road running right now, more so than usual, which is fine too because the trails we just got big snow, so I can't get on the trails much this week. So it's a little different, and he's been racing more than I have been. In this year I've done one ultra, and he's already done, three ultras. So he's a little bit different runner than I am in the fact that he can handle that kind of schedule. I'm not so sure I could handle that kind of schedule. So I don't get wrapped up into it too much. I'll go to those races and I'll hang out, but I don't get roped into running. So
someone has to watch Sycamore.
Exactly. That's exactly how it works. We take turns. I race and he puppy sits and vice versa. So.
Hey, Ian, I have a question. I don't have the stat in front of me. How many ultras have you run?
Comset 50K last weekend was my 189th ultra.
Wow. Okay, so Ian Torrance, 189 ultras. Why do you need a coach? why is it important for you to have a coach?
Well, so 100 miles for me is it's a question of being held accountable. There's a lot of obviously longer long runs. There's this volume component that Emily was talking about. It's easy for me to not do the second run of the day, or to turn the long run into a shorter long run. And I think it's like accountability, just having the schedule and having someone to have to report back to is really important.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of negotiating that can happen within yourself on a long run. It's like,
exactly. You know,
I really need to take care of myself, and maybe I need a little bit more recovery, and this area needs a little bit more rest. I think maybe I'll just take this shortcut today and make it back to the car and say that's just wise training.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm one to do that.
Well, that's nice to know I'm in good company.
So you're in the midst of training for this A race in this summer. Was the article that you wrote on patience, was it born from this training that you're doing?
Actually, most of my articles are born from the athletes I work with.
Okay.
And patience is a topic that I always have to talk to them about. People want to get faster. They want to improve, which is why we have our coach athlete relationship. Everyone wants to get better and be faster, but a lot of people don't give it the time that's needed. Like I pointed out in the article, it just takes a long time for the body to adapt to new training, new stimulus, and people think it's going to happen in one training cycle. And, they train for an A race, and they aren't fast enough, or they don't place high enough. And, a lot of frustration gets born out of that. And, you have to, it's not a one and done deal. You can't do everything you want to do in 12, 16 week time frame. You got to look at it. You got to look at the long view, and it takes a long time to get fast, to get better and to improve and to see improvements. I've run for most of my life. You know, I started running in junior high, and so I've had this long time to get to where I'm at. A lot of people haven't had this kind of background, a good portion of the athletes I work with, you know, just started running maybe 3 or 4 or 2 years ago, and it just takes a long time for the body to get in gear and to get used to running and to get faster.
So the patience that you're talking about is mainly patience in training. Is that correct?
Yeah, patience in training. And then, I also allude to the fact that even during the race, say you're running a 100-mile race and people are looking around trying and jockeying for position at mile 3 in a 100-mile race. And, for most of us, we don't need to do that. We need to focus on taking care of ourselves, eating and drinking and pacing ourselves correctly and not worrying about what the runner ahead of you is doing and how far they are ahead of you.
So, Ian, you said 189 races, that you said it takes time to prepare for a 100-mile race. Even with a guy like yourself with Base, how long are you taking to prepare and ramp up? Let me ask that to Emily. Let's ask the coach. Emily, and then we'll go to yourself. How long does it take you to ramp up, Emily, for your 100-mile races?
Right.
What amount of time?
Yeah, well, I mean, I built this plan in January, so we started the build-up between, from then to Western. I built out the entire plan. However, he's able to get in some volume now, like I said, with those longer events, and he's able to use events to get that volume. So he's putting in quite a bit of groundwork right now, but also these races right now, I've kind of broken it into a stepping stone. So Zane Gray is a 50-mile, he does every year, and I know that he'll want to run well there, and that'll be more like an A race. So that kind of breaks it up in terms of the schedule. So, and then we'll get back into more volume after that, more like 50-mile races. So he's got that and Silver State 50 after that in May. So it'll go up a little bit in volume, but again, it's been a building process since January, really, with that target goal. So for me, personally, in the past couple of times we've prepared for Western, I've had a late start, not as much time to prepare, and I typically don't do the events as much. I might do like one 50-mile race, and that's about it, just because it takes a lot out of me to race, or at least at that point in time it did. And again, that volume was pretty high for me still, so.
When you're speaking volume, give us a number, like a weekly, a weekly mile volume for Ian, and then right. Yourself, yeah.
Yeah, he's been hovering in the 80s, like low 80s, mid to low 80s, depending on the week. So, his down weeks are still, he's in the 70s, and he's been holding that pretty consistent, so since January. And for me, it might be similar. It's hard to say. My training's been really up and down over the past couple of years, so for me, 70s, 80s is getting up there.
So here's a question to, let's go Ian first, and then Emily, you can chime in. As a coach, when do you have to push your runner and say, listen, you need to be putting in more mileage this week, or you need to be doing some more speed work, pushing them beyond what they should be doing versus saying you need to back off, you need to be more patient, you need to be, just wait. How often do you have those discussions, and what proportion of time do you have those discussions?
Definitely have this discussion on a weekly basis. Yes. with almost all my clients, and they fall into two categories. I have most of them fall into the group that they want to do more. They think they should be doing more. And I'm reining them back in, telling them to be patient. Now's not the time that we want. Sorry, it's like a kennel in here.
We're patient.
We haven't asked Sycamore a question. She wants some mic time.
Yeah. Just, you know, people can always do more. We can always ask more of ourselves, but there becomes that point of diminishing returns where, yeah, okay, we start doing more, and then you start dealing with things like injury and burnout, not performing as well as you'd like on race day because maybe you did too much 2 weeks before that. I think that's where most of the athletes fall. And then you have another group of people that want to do big things, but life gets in the way. And you kind of have to put the carrot out on the stick in front of them and really motivate some people. So maybe they're missing workouts, or when they go to do a quality workout, you ask them to do 4 or 5 mile repeats and they do 3. And on the fourth one, they get tired. So they just jog home. It's, it's again, that dichotomy of personalities and, Did that answer your question?
I think so.
So the majority of the time you're actually reining people back. There's a smaller percentage of time where you're kicking them in the butt.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about coaching, and both Emily and Ian are coaches over at McMillanRunning.com and two very experienced ultra running coaches, along with many others. You can see their bios on that website. And so it's nice to know that your coach has actually not only been there but also doing it too, and they have real world experience, which is good. Hey, I'd like to talk and get in a little bit about patience and patience during a race, kind of letting the race come to you instead of you attacking the race. I think that's an important concept, and one that maybe some runners never learn. You know, so can we talk? Can you guys speak a little bit about patience in a race and allowing that race to come to you? Scott, go ahead.
Can I just ask? I want to see Ian.
You didn't like my question?
No, I did. Oh. I did. I'm just gonna have a little yes or no.
Oh,
Ian's run 189 ultras. Ian, do you find that you can be patient in a race when the gun goes off? Do you get caught up in the hype and the adrenaline and go out too fast, or are you a master Zen master of patience?
Zen master.
I am not a master Zen. I've run a lot of races, and everyone, you know, a lot of them I've said, this is only going to be a training race. And once I pin the bib number on and the gun goes off, it's hard for me to just let people go by me or to slow down. I always feel like I should be exerting at least some sort of effort level during a race. And I'm the type of person that if someone's ahead of me and I think I should be at least up with them and I'm not, then I've had so many pity parties, and those are something I've, it's hard to stay, you know, I don't know. I like to race. So, and I'm competitive, and when the gun goes off, yes, I will do my best at every day and, at every race.
But what if that racer is making that mistake and not letting the race come to them? What if you know in your gut that, you know what, that guy or that gal, they're going out too fast, and I've seen their results, and I know this course, and there's just no way they're going to keep that up. Can you let them go? And Emily, let's take that to you.
Yeah.
Can you let that runner just run off without you?
I think that's where knowing your competition, which I know Ian's written about before, is huge. Sometimes you don't know your competition, and some people may be able to hold something you didn't think they could. But, you know, a lot of times you have a good feel for that's just kind of crazy. That's not going to last. So sometimes I'll try to keep those people within touch and try not to let them get too far ahead, because then even if they tank, sometimes they can still maintain that they've built up a lead and they can maintain it. So just being smart and kind of gauging where your effort level lies and how close you can you still be to them without putting yourself in the same boat, and then putting yourself in a position to take over when the time is right. You know, to make that decision. But in Ian's defense, I think, I mean, he races, but he obviously does something right. He must practice a little bit of restraint, because for the most part, he will finish it out strong and he'll pass people in a lot of these races. So he must have a little bit of patience in there somewhere.
our sport's small enough that, and you know, if you've done a couple of races locally, you kind of get a good sense of who you're racing against and the people that show up and kind of their how they attack each race. And so I know around here in Arizona, I can go to a local race and the gun can go off and I'll know exactly who's going to sprint out ahead and who's going to come back and who's going to go on to win the race. You know, people kind of have their own style, I guess, of racing. And sometimes that style is great. And sometimes it's like, wow, will they ever learn? they always go out too hard, or it's that other runner that you always see come up behind you later in the race. Like, he's doing it again. He reeled me in again. And, you know, you kind of get this everyone kind of has their own style, and you can kind of dial that in. You can almost predict when and who's going to do what during the race.
Okay, are you ready for the million-dollar question?
I'm ready.
Are you? One that I've wondered about forever, and I'm ready to listen and get an answer. During the million-dollar question, we kind of – so that – I'm back. Good. Okay. So can you start out too slow? As a runner, can you not have put yourself out there at the right pace to take advantage of efficiency and economy and all of those things? Can you start too slow in a race?
I know I have killed myself before with too much patience. All throughout my racing career, there have been some times where I've gone out too conservative. And then as far as competing with the other runners, then I had too much ground to make up and I didn't have enough time to make it up. So that's my take on patience and too much patience.
Yeah, if it's an A race, you can certainly ruin your race by going out too slow.
Not only against the competition that might be in front of you, but your own self as competition. You know, spending more time in the beginning may sabotage yourself being out there more time or even looking at the race day, looking at where the heat is in a day. If it's in the midday, do you try to strategically put a little more effort when it's cool, conserve in the middle, and then roll it out in the evening? If you actually run at night, because you guys are so fast, you may not see any nighttime. But
they have no experience with that.
They haven't seen the day change much with that kind of speed. You've seen day change, so just. Just looking at the course and thinking about effort and saying I'm gonna put a little bit more here and back off here. Do you use that as a technique of patience?
Sure. Time of day, heat of day, also just kind of the terrain of the course. If you know downhill, I like technical downhill running, and I can make up quite a bit of time on runners ahead of me on those kind of sections and. You know, climbing, not my strong suit. So, you just remain patient while you're climbing. And then when you get to, if you know the course and if you studied it, you can use the terrain to your advantage as well. And you can push on terrain types that you're good on.
You know, this sport is a chess match. I mean, there's so much involved. You have the course, you have the heat of the day or the night, you have all kinds of, you know, crew and aid stations and all kinds of things that are variables that you have to manipulate to help you get through. So you can really never get bored with this sport. It is, you know, people say running is boring. It is It is absolutely the opposite of boring, especially when you're trying to navigate through a 50K, 50 mile, 100, name the distance. It's a thinking person's game.
Yeah. I know I've had athletes come back to me in terms of patience in races, and they're like, well, I felt great at the end, and maybe I could have gone harder earlier. I think that's, you know, it's hard to reflect on that, because wouldn't you rather finish feeling strong and feeling great as opposed to maybe going out harder and then feeling like death at the end? So it's really a gamble when you're out there, like, where is that line of patience, of too much patience and just right? And then, you know, you can reflect and say, well, yeah, maybe you would have gone harder, but maybe then you would have tanked and you ultimately would have finished slower. It's so hard to really dial that in. And like you said, you take in all those factors, and it's each race and each day. I don't know. You got to take it as it comes.
One of the things you wrote in there, Ian, is in a 1600, in a mile race, you can wait a minute or so. But in ultra running, it's more than a minute, you know.
Oh, yeah. Hours.
Just lay them back and let it happen.
You know, so back to the patience on the starting line. You know, even experienced runners like yourself, you're saying that sometimes it's tough to be patient. As a coach, you're coaching an athlete that you know has this tendency to just rabbit start and get out there much faster than they should. What kind of tips or tricks do you coach them with to get them in the right frame of mind so they have patience when they start?
one of the ones I've used, and it actually worked really well, was I had an athlete who always started really fast. Like, the gun would go off and it's like a 50K, but he goes out like it's a 5K. And I told him to start 4 or 5 minutes after the gun.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So he didn't like that idea at all. And
hey, Ian, if that's the kind of coaching you're doing, I think I'm going to pick Emily.
this was an experiment. So
all right.
So we wanted to get him away from the faster lead runners and have him run a more even race, and getting him away from the actual start. And, you know, because everyone kind of goes off fast. And so to get him away from that stimuli, you're going to wait 4 minutes after they 4 or 5 minutes after they start the race, and then you can start running. And when you start running by yourself, the adrenaline, the pacers aren't there, and he actually ran really well. It was one of his best races, even though we subtracted 5 minutes from his time.
That's interesting.
You know, that's a good point, because if everybody else is 5 minutes ahead of you, it almost becomes more of a training run, right?
Yeah.
That's what you do all week for weeks on end leading up to the race. You're usually out there on your own or with a training partner. And it more simulates what you've been practicing.
Yeah, it really helped his frame of mind too. Instead of being passed in the second half of the race, he was doing all the passing.
Nice.
And when you do that, that really helps the ego. That really helps motivate. When you keep seeing someone in front of you and you catch them and you pass them, you catch them and you pass them. It's not as demoralizing as if everyone's going by you.
Have we covered what we wanted to talk about during a race, patience during a race?
I have one more thing on patience during a race.
Yeah.
You mentioned in the article, and I think, you know, we've talked about this, I don't know how many times on Trail Runner Nation, and that is focus on the now. Focus on what you need to do right now to be your very best right now in the race. And I think of this because I heard some runners give me a little pace report of last weekend was way too cool. And some of these racers that have been training for a very long time for this race and really amped up, they're in very good shape, think that they can go out and push themselves at a faster pace during the first half of the race because they're just feeling so great. It's a great day. The weather's great. And they forget. They're thinking, about, you know, mile 20, mile 30 down the road, and they're not thinking about what needs to happen right now. They feel a little tweak. They feel like they're getting a little crampy, and they just kind of throw that out. They think, oh, don't worry about it. It'll go away. Instead of thinking about, okay, what do I need to be doing right now so that I don't get those cramps? What do I need to be doing right now fueling-wise so that I know I'm not going to bonk?
Staying present.
Staying present. How important is that, Emily?
Oh, it's really important. So that's something with these longer races that I impress upon my athletes quite a bit, especially the ones who are, well, new and experienced ultra runners, is I like to have them really focus on their nutrition and their fueling in the first half. I think that's something takes your mind off a little bit of that, going back to patience, kind of going out way too hard. If you have something else to think about, you're like, okay, every 30 minutes I need to be doing this, or however your plan is set up as far as your fueling. I think it's really important. So, and they can get in as much as they can early, and that's going to pay off later on. And, you know, a lot of times people are afraid to stop at the aid stations early too, because they're going to lose time. Same thing, they're wrapped up in the race. They're not thinking about how it's going to affect them later on down the road. So they, yeah, it's really, I impress upon that. Take care of yourself the first half, and everyone will come back to you if you do that.
Yeah, that's good. Let's talk about long training runs, or just all training in general, about how that is, it's really truly race preparation. It's not about just logging the miles. I need to get my 70 miles in or 80 miles in. It's about how this training event is going to make me better at racing. Plugging yourself in to the race while you're training and practicing nutrition, practicing pacing. Can we talk about how training can actually be what it's supposed to be, race preparation, and not just, you know, miles for a logbook? Ian, what, or whom, yeah, or Sycamore? Sycamore, you want to weigh in on this?
Sycamore's a puppy, it sounds like. I don't think she has much patience, or he.
She's not running, you know.
She has no patience.
She has ADD.
How can training race prep?
Yeah.
Someone who plays an instrument or any other kind of specialized skill, we practice that to make it perfect. So when you go to the recital, you can nail it. I mean, that's what training's all about. It's not just about getting the miles in, performing a workout, but it's creating habit. It's habit forming. And if you train, do your long runs, practice your nutrition routine, practice your pacing, your drinking, your equipment, on race day, you're less likely to have to think about all those things. So,
I bring that up. I'm sorry, I spoke over you, Emily. Go ahead. What'd you say?
Okay. I was just saying, I mean, to Ian's point, you want to eliminate as many of those variables that you can for race day. So the more you have all of those things dialed in, the better you're setting yourself up.
I brought the question up because I think I'm very guilty of saying, okay, it's a, you know, whatever mile run that day. And I think the goal is really just to get those miles done, but not thinking about, I should measure my effort so that I have something left at the end. I should, you know, roll out hard on this hill so I could see how long it takes me to recover on the backside. Just really looking at that training scenario and how it translates to my race day scenario, and really learning myself better and plugging into my fitness and understanding me better instead of just slogging the miles, but really, really understanding myself.
Instead of throwing on those headphones and just running to the beat of the music, huh?
Yeah, maybe listening to my own my own feedback and not whoever is, you know, out there giving me that stuff in my ear, except for Trail Runner.
Sure. That's good to listen to. if you use one of our training plans, we do a lot of progression runs or fast finish long runs. I mentioned those in the patient's article too. We race simulation type runs where you will be running fast at a later point in the race. And I think that's the best way to run any race, whether it be a 5K or a 100 miler, is you want to be able to run at your hardest effort at the last third of the race, no matter the distance. So basically, if you can even split or negative split your race and or run the second half as fast as you ran the first half or faster, that is always a successful tactic. And yes, 100 milers are a little different. You've got, especially a trail 100 where you've got a lot of terrain to contend with. But effort-wise, we should be pouring more of our effort into the second half of a race than the first half. And these fast finish long runs, progression runs, these kind of runs develop that kind of patience where you have to wait, you don't need to test yourself in the first half of the training run. We're going to test you after you put some miles on, after you've fatigued, after you've dehydrated a little bit, making sure you're taking care of yourself in the first half of the workout. And then we nail you in the second half. We want you to run faster or with a higher effort in the second half to make sure that, yeah, you did your due diligence in the first half of the workout.
I imagine out of the four of us that are in this conversation here and all of those that are listening, we've had some runs or some races that have kind of not gone as planned. Maybe they've, gone a little sideways on us. Can you share with us some cues or clues where, you know what, this is an early piece of biofeedback, a bit of information coming in early that I need to back off, I need to think fueling, I need to think sodium, I better change something now. When you're racing, how do you tune in? What do you listen for? What's your antenna bringing in for you guys?
It, for me, it's my attitude.
Mm.
If I'm grumpy,
that's
at mile 30 of 100 miles, I know that I'm either running too fast or I'm not eating enough. Something's not right, and I've gotta do something to fix that. That usually my DNFs have come from my attitude and not so much physical problems.
Ian, that's huge. Yeah. That's huge. The attitude thing, because we've talked to Sonny Blinde and others about how, just the body's, the blood glucose, all the
metabolism,
things, the negative chatter, all the stuff that happens is because there's a body system that's starting to move the wrong direction, and attitude can be something certainly to dial into. We talk about heart rate and breathing rate and maybe ache or pain here, or just all the other things that are obvious to look at, but you're just talking about, are you happy or not? Frowny face, happy face. Where are you on the scale of enjoying this run?
And sometimes, even if you don't want to have a smiley face, when I know that when I try to go into an aid station, regardless of how I feel, don't have that pity party or whatever. Just put on a smiley face and go in, and it actually helps.
It may help you, but it may help your crew, but it's still information you need to listen to. I'm faking my smile.
Oh, yeah.
So that means there's something going wrong. You got to change something. Fake smile isn't a solution to the body breaking down. Huh. Emily, what do you listen for in your body?
I guess in some ways it's similar, but for me, usually my issues have stemmed from nutrition. So something I've struggled with quite a bit in a lot of my races is getting in enough calories. So, and of course I'm trying to race at a hard effort and a high effort, and then the wheels come off because I'm not eating enough. Sometimes it's really hard because I've been having some stomach issues, so I don't want to eat. Plus I'm just really bad about it. So it's something I've been really working on, and a lot of times for me going to liquid calories is, like Coke, something that's really fast acting kind of helps get me out of it. I can tell. I start to just slow down. I start to get a little foggy headed. I'm like, well, I messed myself up again. So that's kind of what happens for me. Everything just sort of dials back, and then you're not, and then I don't feel like I'm in the race anymore, and then the pity party does start, so it's kind of a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about patience when you do dig yourself a hole. Yeah. So, Emily, you're saying sometimes, you know, you neglect your nutrition, and you've dug yourself this hole. What kind of patience is necessary to dig yourself back out so that you can come out of that hole?
Right. It's hard because you know, sometimes that nutrition comes in quick, your body will respond and you can get another, you know, little burst of energy, and you feel good for a short while. But the key is you got to keep that up. So you just got to keep putting in those calories as much as you can. Sometimes it's hard because at that point in time, depending on the race and how far you're going, it's hard to completely turn it around at that point. So you just got to stay tough and finish it out. Like I said, for me, if I can just try to keep those calories coming pretty consistently, that's enough to at least get me through to the finish. I remember my first 50 at JFK racing Ellie, and that's exactly what happened to me. My fitness was really good, and obviously inexperience and not good fueling kind of led to my demise that second half of the race. So I was running strong. I was doing great. It seems like this is awesome. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, that is not awesome.
How quick it can change.
You know, you're like, good job. And I'm like, oh no, I still have 25 miles to go. So I kind of knew that was probably what was going on. And I just started hammering in the gels. And I was like, I mean, I know at this point I'm gambling having a stomach issue versus my energy, but I took the gamble and just put in the calories, and that did help. I mean, I was still not able to run the pace I was running, but it definitely helped get me through the finish.
We're talking about patience. There's a lot of people coming to our sport. I mean, we always hear it's growing faster than ever. It's amazing. A lot of new faces. I think we had, 291 first-time 50Kers out there at Way to Cool. Never had run an ultra, and that's a lot of people. That's a lot of first-timers that successfully came through.
That's more than probably even ran the first race.
Probably the cool Canyon Crawl back in the day.
Yeah.
And so with all of these new faces and runners and people that want stuff now and quickly, let's talk about maturing and time and the patience it takes to mature into these races. Can you take that on, Ian?
Sure. Ultras are pretty demanding. It's a pretty demanding sport. And, I have found that over my 189 ultras that things get easier. And easier and physically, I recover better. I'm out running the next day. That's not a problem anymore. I don't have to take a week off. I remember my first ultra, my first JFK, I had to crawl upstairs and crawl into a tub to clean myself. after my first 100 miler, I felt like crap. I had lead legs for probably 2 or 3 months afterwards. Now I bounce back pretty quick.
Lead legs for 2 or 3 months, Ian?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Wow. Yeah.
No, but Don, it only takes 189 races to turn that around.
Yeah, well, no, I'm with you, Ian. I'm sure I was lead legs for I probably still have lead legs from that first race. I have lead legs for my first 5K. I can't shake these things.
Yeah, the body gets used to doing it. A lot of people run an ultra and they don't have a great experience, or the recovery just takes so long that they don't want to go through that again. But it gets easier the more you do. So if you had a bad experience on race day, if you stomach problems, if you puke, things like that, then that's something. Again, it's that learning curve that I discussed in that patience piece. Right after the race, write down what the problems were and what you need to do to correct them, and then try it again. I think that's really exciting about this sport is you can screw up, you can still finish, and then you can take those things and improve on them and play it forward to the next race and try to correct those issues and to run 30, 50, 60, 100 miles and do it without pain and without nausea. Those are the goals, the ultimate goals. I think it's fun to try to achieve that.
Have you ever achieved that, Ian? Have you ever run a race without nausea or pain or just suffering?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. There's always a little bit of suffering. I mean, I think that comes with any race, any distance. It's just a different kind of suffering with a 5K than it is with a 100 miler. But, it's a long way to run, and we're running. And if you're running to perform or to race, if you are truly racing, there's just some inevitable suffering that's going to happen.
You talked about taking careful notes after a race. Do both of you do that? Do you get back home and sit down and say, I think this is what happened to me, and use that as a reference for the future?
Not every race, but for the big A races, we do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's important to pick out your positives too. There had to have been something good in there. So sometimes people say everything that went wrong, but then they forget to look at what did go right. Like the fact that maybe that was their first 50K and they went further than they've ever gone before. It's huge.
Yeah, we talked about that. We talked about that. We had a guest on a recent podcast that talked about writing down those positive things and reviewing those before the race getting in a good headspace prior to going in, just not focusing on this has gone bad. Also looking at, I did this race and this training run and everything went perfect and I ran like I was on a cloud. I mean, it's good to rehearse and review some of that.
And these are the things that I did that maybe led to that perfect training run. So that's what I'm going to do today on race day.
And part of it is sleep. That's pretty important. We haven't talked about that in a while. When we got up early to do this podcast, thanks to both of you for joining us early. But hey, rest is important. Patience and rest. Let's talk about rest. I think some of my best runs are just associated with getting enough sleep. Yeah.
Definitely. Sleep and then also, reining yourself back in. Like what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast is reining yourself in. Recovery can come in sleep, which is the best way to recover, but it also comes in the form of not running as much or cross training or
maybe bring your effort level back.
Yeah, taking it easier on your runs.
I don't know how to even ask this. Maybe I'll just state this. So we were at the finish line announcing the folks coming in at Way to Cool. And it is amazing to me the different finishers that are coming through. People that if you were standing behind in a line at a grocery store, you would never guess in a million years that one, they were a runner, but two, that they could just kill
a sub 4 hour 50K
that with on a course with 5,000 feet of climb on it. Yeah. It's amazing. You can look at a person and never predict whether they can or can't. So this sport is so cool. It's inviting to everyone. There's certain sports, like a gymnast. You never see. You can pretty much predict what the gymnast is going to look like, but you cannot predict an ultra runner.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is inside.
Yeah.
An ultra runner, you have to look on the inside of them and not the outside. Well, I guess, if you ever want to kill a podcast or a conversation, I'm going to take that in my notes that is something you just don't say. Sycamore, you got anything for us?
Well, I love the final paragraph in your article. Ian says,
That's a good rescue, Scott. Thanks.
No, this is good. He says, why ruin the best book you've ever read by skipping to the middle chapters and going straight to the end? Mm. The indisputable truth is this. It takes years to build the fitness and skills necessary to complete an ultra marathon. However, we can lose it all in an instant with one hasty decision.
Mm. Nice ending.
Yeah, I really, really believe that. I think the reason we do this sport and why you see all those peeps coming across the finish line, it's, you know, they like the adventure. They like the trip that they're on. They like the satisfaction of this long journey that they've completed. It's not just about the finish, but it's about all the work that you've put in to get to the finish. And yeah, you can screw it up with one hasty decision. You can screw up your race by not drinking enough, not eating enough. You can screw up your training by overdoing it and injuring yourself and never seeing the starting line. It's a balance you've got to play, and to come out on top, like all those people last weekend at Way to Cool Dude, is that's awesome.
You know, Sycamore was plays a big role on this podcast. patience, puppies. There's very little patience with a puppy, and they get out there and run, and they run hard, and then they lay down, and there's no getting them up. And many of us in our races, when we put a bib on, become Sycamore. We get out there and we bounce around, we go hard, and the next thing you know, we want to just lie down. And so, you know, Sycamore, we appreciate you coming on this podcast and helping bring your two owners here as well to share some of their experiences too. So do not be a Sycamore unless you have a short race. Enjoy life like Sycamore, because, yeah, you know, you take it in, you bite some grass, you run over, you smell something, you greet people, you say hello. I mean, the dog has it right with all aspects except patience and pace.
That's very philosophical, Don.
Well, you know, since I ruined the podcast a few statements ago, I had to try to come up with something. So running for Team Adidas, correct?
Yes, me and Emily's Nike.
Oh, all right. So
that's right. Emily jumped the ship.
A divided house. We have a Nike athlete and an Adidas athlete.
So Emily, get specific. You say you're training for a road marathon. When is this and what is it?
Eugene Marathon in May. So the plan is to secure my trials qualifier.
Sweet. And Ian, what is up on the docket for you before states?
I don't know. It cut out.
Maybe.
Well, you're back.
Oh, the question was to you, Ian. What's next before states? Do you have anything specific?
I'm running. I'll run Crown King. The plan is Crown King, which is at the end of the month, which is an old school race that Aravipa Running puts on. It starts outside of Phoenix and runs up into the Bradshaw Mountains, into the town of Crown King. It's an old mining town. It's a point-to-point 50K. It's all gain. You start about 2,000 feet and you finish at about 7,000 feet. And then Zangre 50 Mile, which is down on the Highline Trail, south, kind of between Phoenix and Flagstaff. It's another point-to-point. It's a 50-miler along the Zangre Highline Trail. It's pretty rough and rugged. And then Silver State 50 Mile in Reno, which I've never run before. And I try to add a new race or two each year to mix it up and to see new places and a new course.
I've run that race, Ian. That's a great race. I've run Silver State in Reno, and it'll be a perfect prep for states. There's a lot of climbing. A lot of it's exposed, and it's a great event that they put on over there.
Awesome. Well, I've heard only good things.
Head over to McMillanRunning.com and check out all the great coaches that are over there. You know, he's put together probably the best world-class coaching staff ever.
Yeah.
And you can sign up. Do you guys, both of you guys, still have openings in your coaching docket?
It's getting tight. We work with Jacob Puzzi. He's another ultra coach here at McMillan Running.
Yeah.
And we work together. And athletes are always coming and going. So you should always, if you're interested, you always reach out.
Did you have a hard time convincing Emily to coach you, or was she filled up, or was her docket filled up, and you had to kind of negotiate some space?
No, it's pretty easy. When you live under the same roof, you can just kind of talk about your training in passing, and it's a lot easier than the more. Plus, I'm not paying for it.
Oh, you always pay, Ian. Yeah, believe me. You think
maybe
no
not
payment.
In dollars and cents.
Go to I Run Far. Go over to I Run Far, Patience and the Ultra Runner, March 3rd, 2015, written by Ian Torrance. We only scraped the surface of this thing, scratched the surface, but there's a lot there, a lot to think about. So we appreciate you guys both coming on and wish you the most success for the season. We'll be watching you. Definitely see you out here at Western States. We'll be rooting for you, so it'll be nice to see you. Are you coming out to Ian's cabin again this year? You did last year.
We won't be there this year.
Okay, so we won't.
We'll do a virtual Ian's cabin.
So Trail Runner Nation, go to trailrunnernation.com, right?
Yeah, sure, why not?
We Are Nation at Twitter.
We have an Instagram account, too, that we need to get more regular with.
And you can go there. We're linked on our own site. Check out that new site that we've done. Scott has some wearables that are left.
Training, probably the best thing you can do for patients is to put a performance-enhancing Cocapelli on your leg.
And that will hold you back, tell you what to do, get you going when you need to go, all of those things. That's a performance promise
for
the Cocapelli. So, Trail Runner Nation, go out and patience.
Mas.
Like a wicker cabinet, chalk white and oh so frail. I see our time has gotten stale. The tick-tock of the clock is painful, all sane and logical. I wanna tear it off the wall. I hear words and clips and phrases, I think sick like ginger ale. My stomach turns. I'm alright.